in the paper where a brother was shot down, someone was stabbed, and we get all upset about that. But unless a person was beat to death by a guard inside the prison, stabbed by someone inside the prison, we don't get upset when we hear about these brothers and sisters dying inside the prison. A lot of people is really upset about my brother Phil that died inside that prison. But there are so many more who don't have names that you would recognize, who wasn't a freedom fighter, who stood on the front line. But when we say all lives matter, do they really? Do they really all lives matter? My brother Phil is an example of resistance. A lot of people now are talking about dealing inside the prison about food and about water. In the area where my brother's is at, fracking goes on there. Mumia right now is very sick inside the prison. He has a skin condition and where he is covered from head to toe, where he's broke out with eczema, is what they're calling it. Some people call it psoriasis. Where's Kazi at? Some people call it psoriasis. But I found out by dealing with Mumia that this is going on throughout a lot of the prisons. Kazi had it when he was in there. And I'm talking to a few other people about the conditions inside the prison, and they're getting it. Now, people say, well, what is causing it? The conditions inside the prison. You want to say air, water, soil, the laundry that they're, you know, that they're doing the clothes with? It's all of that. But our concern, our genuine concern about political prisoners, about people inside the prison, there's a statistic that's going around of the hundreds of people that is dying inside them prisons every day. Betty calls them death camps, and that's exactly what they are. Concentration camps, death camps, it's all the same. Exactly. And but when we got to get really serious about these political prisoners, and because they're coming home with arthritis that's beyond repair. They're coming home. They're inside the prison. There's so many political prisoners in prisons inside them prison, men, women, and children, who have terrible health issues. How many people in here deal with the issue of health inside the prisons? Former political prisoners? And sister that's known for fighting for political prisoners and prisoners throughout the world, Safia Gill and Elijah, there's Laura. But how many people here care about political prisoners? What I'm saying is we really got to get on the move. We got to understand that if you're thirsty and you say that you want some water, and that glass is right here, I don't care how much you believe in drinking that water, until you reach over, grab that water, and throw it down your throat, you ain't did a damn thing. Understand? Understood, yeah. So what I'm saying is, when you say that you care, and this issue is there, we have got to be about the business of doing something. There are organizations. Safia Gill and Elijah heads one of the biggest organizations in New York, governmental group. And Laura, she works with prisoners. The elders that's inside the prison that's dying, we got to jump on board, and we got to really, really do something, or there will be more and more political prisoners that you know that's not going to make it outside that gate. I want to let you know that we're doing an event on May 13th, 2015, which will mark 30 years since they dropped the bomb on my family, killing 11 men, women, and children. A lot of people don't even know why they did that. They don't know why on August 8, 1978, 10,000 rounds of ammunition was fired into a home on my family. Thousands of pounds of water pressure was put in the home and all where men, women, and children were at. And all, you know, it wasn't because we curse. And all, you know, because anybody in this room can tell you, if they go to a movie and they don't hear a curse word, they feel really insulted, a lot of them, you know, and that's a fact. But they were after us because we understand the importance of water. We understand the importance of the soil. We understand the importance of pure air. And we understand that if we don't fight for that, we ain't fighting. And because in order to have strong people fighting, you got to fight for that which sustains you. Understand? My brother didn't die from a bullet in the back. Lynn had cancer before she went into the prison. And a lot of other people around here. And it didn't come from smoking. It came from breathing, inhaling, exhaling, drinking water, and eating food from Whole Foods. All these places who pretend to give you food that is pure, that is organic. But how can you have an organic food when you don't have seeds in it? How can you tell somebody that you're selling wholesome, good food when you're giving people water out of cheap plastic that'll bend when you do it like this? This government has always put illusions before us. And because we have a little bit of money, I love the brother with the working class street poet, you all right. And I'm get your album. You gave me some. But how come we're not protesting at Whole Foods? How come we're not protesting at these other stores that's not Whole Foods? I don't know what the supermarkets of your choice is here. But we have Giant and Pathmark and, you know, all those other ones. So you got this Whole Foods store on this corner. You have Pathmark on this corner. And you're going over here because you believe that the one over there is feeding you poison. And I'm saying, is murder a crime? Is it mass murder a crime? You go there because you don't want the diseases that's on there and you trip and you hallucinate and go over here. But only people with a little bit of money can go over here. So you don't really fight with the people over here and educate them. We got to shut these mothers down. We got to shut them down. And all for the sake of our children. Okay? We got to fight inside them prisons for the sake of our children, because our future, our babies, our men, our women is inside these prisons. And they're misfeeding, miseducating them, and we don't seem to get it. When we say mass murder is a crime, Pathmark is a crime. Whole food is a crime. The stuff that they're feeding, what's those corporations that are feeding our children inside them prisons, our grandfathers, our mothers, what are they? How do we allow them to get away with this? Have we become that apathetic? You know, and the same information that I'm giving you, I get. I'm guilty of the same things, but I'm also guilty of, I educate people about it to wake people up, to make them understand what it is that we got to be doing when we demonstrate. We'll demonstrate when a brother is shot. We'll have a Ferguson hands up, but we need to be standing in front of them damn supermarkets hands up. We need to be in front of them schools who give them Ritalin, Prozac, and all them drugs to our children. When they tell you that drugs is wrong. But we have allowances for certain people that we got to stop this stuff. You say we love our children, but send them in an institute that dope them up. You know, we have a president and all the people. I didn't vote for him. I did not vote for him. I did not vote for him. I did not vote for him, but I sure vote for the exposure of the people who put him in office. Obama was never the great black hope. He was always the hope of corporate America. He was always the hope of the white supremacists who play these games with our mind, who play with our game, those games in our supermarkets, and who got us tripping out thinking Fuji is better than what you drink in your tap when poison is poison. You know I'm not poisoned that much, but poison is poison. So how is it that you separate that much? And where is the separation in it? It's not. We got to rise up now, and fight like we never fought before. If you say you want to do something for political prisoners, the fighting in the street, the going to the boards, and for people who believe in the vote, make that damn vote work for you. Don't put some Joe knucklehead in office and think that he's supposed to do for you what you ain't doing for yourself. What do he care about your child? Your mother, your sister, what supermarket have they shut down? What prison have they gone into and talked about the problems inside them prisons? What have they done, any of them, in a full force? Take the floor. Don't get off the hands up. All of them do it, white, black, brown, yellow, because all of our families are being affected by this. They're murdering our people inside them prisons. They're murdering our people inside this prison that people don't even realize that they're in prison. In prison to the minds of Whole Foods. And I keep saying Whole Foods because people swear by them. They come out with them bags with their arms drooping down to here. Whole Foods. And spinach goes fast. I don't know how many people have been here years ago eating spinach. I've been eating spinach for a long time. And when I used to make the salad, my fingers would be green from picking it. And all the juice, that good old juice from that spinach salad, and all it was green in there. You knew you had chlorophyll. Go to Whole Foods and pick some of that spinach now. I mean, take the test. Pick the spinach. Understand, we don't even know that we're not eating food. We're not eating food. Do you remember the fuzzy peach? You remember the peach was fuzzy, the sweet potato had hair, you had to do some work, and the white potato, you had to wash the mud off of it. You find no example of mama on it. You don't find where there's a worm that has been on it. It's not there. But what is right, life will eat. Now, life will not accept that plastic that we drink water out of. They wind up making toys. They make kitchen appliances out of it. They make tables out of it. And, you know, because how many people here know that the earth will not accept plastic? Why? Why? It doesn't break down. It won't break down. But we drink our water out of it. I just want to say, I love political prisoners. I love my people, and we do to educate them by any means necessary at any time. This isn't the usual speech from me, but this is the speech that I'm giving, you know, dealing with us. This is a love talk. On the move.
On the move. Thank you so much, Pam. We've got our marching orders, but we're going to move on. We have technical problems because we have Earth Firsters out in Minneapolis. Jesse Sundin has been waiting, but we're going to move on if we can get Mimi up here to introduce our next guest. Okay, if she doesn't want to introduce our next guest, Okay, we have it. Viney Burrows, who has been waiting. Oops. Would you get that, please? First Lady of the Theater, you must see this woman at every opportunity because she can handle any element of the social and political life.
So good to be here, to feel the energy passion, the will of all of you. You exist, you survive, we shall overcome. When Lynn sent out the message that she wanted to give a Valentine present to political prisoners, it was so typical of the loving, giving woman person that she is. And so we are here with her, remembering the political prisoners inside and realizing also that we are political prisoners inside. I want to read for you two very short pieces. I don't even think they need an introduction. You'll know who's talking. They're speaking from death row. The first died August the 23rd, 1928. If it had not been for this thing, I might live out of my life talking at street corners to scorning men. I might have died unmarked, unknown, a failure. Now, we are not a failure. This is our career and our triumph. Never in our full life could we hope to do so much for tolerance, for justice, for man's understanding of man, as now we do by accident. Our words, our lives, our pains, nothing. The taking of our lives, the lives of a good shoemaker, and a poor fisherman, that is all. And that last moment belonged to us. That agony is our triumph. Bartolomeo Vanzetti. The state often murders. Sometimes it puts you in a death house and murders you. Sometimes it makes certain that you don't get the proper food or decent housing or health care. But Sacco and Vanzetti, a good shoemaker and a poor fish peddler, we remember what the state did to them on August the 23rd, 1928. There is another voice I would like to share with you. This is Odell Walker. I realize I haven't lived so upright in the past with the laws of the good Lord and with the laws of the land. And as my time near, each second means I'm one nearer my grave. I've asked God to forgive me, and I feel that He has. See, one thing, you can't make a young person out of an old one, and you can't make an old person out of a young one. It takes time and experience. Now, all you people, take this under consideration. Have you ever thought, some people are allowed a chance over and over again, and then there are others are allowed little chance, and some no chance at all. Now, you take big people as the president and the governor, judge, they children will never have to suffer. They have plenty of money, born in a mansion, nothing to never worry about. When a fella accidentally fall, don't get on him with both feet. Help him up. When he see another ditch, he'll walk around it and advise others of the place so they can see it. But if you mash him down, he can't advise others of the danger. Now, this is Odell Walker speaking. I accidentally fell and some good people tried to help me. Others did everything they could against me. So the governor and the coach, they don't know the true facts. The good book says a lie is the worst thing a person can tell. So I know lies was told on me. And they know they lied. And God know they lied. So in the great day, God will say, you fellas lied on Odell Waller. So I appreciate every effort the people put forth to try to save me. I've been 630 days on death row. And tomorrow, I die at 8:30 a.m. on July 2nd, 1942, and I'd be here 631 days. Last thing I say, don't never work for a man too poor to pay you. He will steal and take it from you. In my case, I work from sunup to sundown, 7 days a week, 10 to 12 hours a day, trying to make a living for my family, and it ended up to mean death for me. See, the penitentiary all over the United States are full of people who was poor. Poor people tried to work, have something, couldn't. This is Odell Wall speaking, a sharecropper.
Thank you so very much, Viney. And I asked her to do Sacco and Vanzetti because it puts me right there. And she puts us right there where she wants us when she speaks. Thanks again, Viney.
Got to hold on here. We're here for the long haul, so no fair weather folks leaving early. We are, I think, honored as we've been all evening to have people who talk the talk and have always walked the walk. And from the borders beyond, one of the people who has been involved in a day-to-day struggle of some of the most important work imaginable, organizing every single day amongst the masses and building one of the most important, sustained grassroots organization in this country now, which comes out of New Jersey, the People's Organization for Progress, our brother, Larry Ham, from Jersey.
Power to the people. Very glad to be here tonight to support the struggle for political prisoners. This is particularly relevant to New Jersey because, you know, New Jersey was for a while holding someone who had been in prison, maybe a record in the state of New Jersey, because he helped a sister named Masada Shakur, Sundiata Okoli. And you know there are forces that don't want him to be free, but we can't rest. We can't let them keep him in prison. We must do everything we can to make sure that he gets the freedom he should have had 40 years ago. He shouldn't have been in jail for 40 years. The people who put him in jail should be in jail. That's the folks that need to be in jail, the people who put him in jail. That's the kind of society we live in. People in prison should be free, and the criminals not only walk around free, but profit from their freedom. You know, a lot of people have been talking about all the progress we've made for the last 50 years. This is the 50th anniversary this year of the Voting Rights Act. Last year was the 50th anniversary of the Civil Rights Act. And those were hard-won gains. But the fact of the matter is, in 1966, the percentage of black people in federal prisons was roughly equal to the percentage of black people in the general population. 1966, there were about 100,000 black men in federal prisons, about 10%. Where are we at 50 years later? 50 years later, black men are over 50% of the federal population. The fact of the matter is, slavery didn't end with the passage of the 13th Amendment. Slavery is in our federal and state prisons and jails all across this country. More people are under the authority of the criminal justice system than were enslaved in 1860. Right now, there are about 7 million black people under the authority of the criminal justice system. In federal prisons, in state prisons, in county jails, in municipal jails, in halfway houses, on parole, in community service, 7 million. And you know the figures. This country imprisons more people than any other country in the world. 25% of the world's prisoners are here in the United States, more imprisoned here than in China, Iraq, and Iran combined. We don't live in a democracy, we live in a garrison state. That's what we live in the United States, a garrison state. And this prison industrial complex is bolstered by the school-to-prison pipeline. They have engineered a situation where they can tell how many beds to put into a prison based on the number of children that are failing in the third and fourth grades. They have a formula. This is criminal. what's happening to black people, not just behind the wall, but on both sides of the wall. The fact of the matter is, it's the same struggle. You can't say you're for black liberation if you're not talking about the people who are behind the wall as well as the people we're fighting for in our communities. It's the same struggle. It's the same fight. And we have to carry that fight on. When I started in the struggle, I was 17 years old. Maybe some of you in here were younger than I was when you started in the struggle. But last night, I had an amazing moment. You know about those amazing moments. You have them every now, maybe every once every decade. You have this moment when you can see, you can push the clouds away, and all of a sudden you see with a clarity you haven't seen before. Or you reach a conclusion that you couldn't reach before. Last night I spoke at a hearing in Newark. It was the first official public hearing for the establishment of a police review board in the city of Newark. And I know for some of you, you don't say much about a police. Y'all got one here in New York, right? And y'all are not jumping for joy, are you? But in Newark, people have been calling for a police review board for more than half a century, since 1966. Newark was calling for a police review board once you guys set up your police review board here in New York. We were calling for a police review board before the rebellion of 1967. Well, last night they had a public hearing. And the person who called the public hearing is the same person who issued the executive order, because that's how it's being established, by executive order of the mayor of Newark. Ross Baraka, the son of Amiri Baraka, has issued an executive order to establish a police review board in Newark. And it's not just any police review board. It's going to be a police review board with subpoena power. It's going to be a police review board that's going to be involved not only in the process of investigating incidents of police brutality, but it will be involved in the process of punishing those who in fact engage in police brutality and the use of excessive force. It's going to be a very strong police review board. And I commend this young mayor, this new mayor, the son of Amiri Baraka. Because see, if he had waited for the city council, it would never get set up. It would never get set up. Because the city council is subject to the pressure from the police union. And y'all know about that. Subject to the pressure of reactionary forces. I think if the mayor had 5 votes, he would have put it through the city council. Or he could have said, I'll wait till I get enough people on the council that are sympathetic. But he didn't wait. He issued an executive order with the stroke of a pen. The man in the White House should learn from this new mayor. With the stroke of a pen, he issued an executive. The man in the White House should learn from this young mayor of Newark. With the stroke of a pen, it was done. It becomes effective on March the 1st. But here's the real deep part of this. I'm standing at the podium. I'm testifying in favor of the police review board. And sitting before me is the son of Amiri Baraka. And if you know anything about the rebellion of 1967, you know that the police tried to kill Amiri Baraka. They beat him to death, and he wore the scar on his forehead from the concussion that they gave him till his dying day. They tried to beat him to death. They took his bloody body and threw it on the floor in front of the police director of that day, whose name was Spina. And they said, "Here's your black militant." And they threw his body on the floor. And then I sat there, and all of a sudden it dawned on me. The man who was brutalized by the police reaches down through 5 decades, reaches past the grave, through his son, and in fact puts civilian oversight over the police force that tried to kill him 40 years ago. I know some of you get jaded. I get jaded. Some of you been in the struggle for so long and have seen things get worse, not get better. And sometimes you want to give up. But last night I realized that we can win. We can win. We can do this. When Ross Baraka said he was running for mayor, they said he didn't have a chance. He was too militant. He wasn't the kind of feely, touchy movie star like the previous mayor was. But the people of Newark were determined. And they elected this young man. And with the stroke of a pen, he created a police review board. But I also say this, it will be an historic moment when that police review board is created. But we are not going to stop struggling in the street. I don't put my hope in a police review board. I put my hope in the struggle of the people for justice. And we're going to continue to fight for justice. We're calling for a march on Saturday, July 25th, and I need your help. We're going to have a million people's march against police brutality, racial injustice, and economic inequality. And we're not going to Washington, D.C. We're going to march right in Newark, New Jersey, because we got to energize and mobilize our base in Newark. And you know, we in Jersey, we always coming over to New York to march with y'all. Now y'all come over to Jersey and march with us for a change. Come over to Jersey and let's fill up Broad Street. Let's fill up Market Street. Let's transform that city for a day and make it feel the power of the people's movement. And when we call for an end to police brutality, we're not only calling for an end to the police brutality in our community, we're calling for an end to the brutalization of our brothers and sisters behind prison walls. We want an end to their brutalization. They experience the same thing. They get killed behind prison walls. They get beat behind prison walls. They get tortured. Where do you think they got the idea to torture people over there with broom handles? They got it from right here. They got it from right here in the United States. They got it from Brooklyn. Where did they get the idea? They got it from Orange, New Jersey, where the police tortured Earl Faison to death. According to the medical examiner and the U.S. attorney. They torture over there, they torture over here. They torture folks inside the prisons, and they torture our people in our communities. So let's come together in our millions, in our tens of thousands, and say an end to police brutality, an end to excessive force, an end to the violation of people's constitutional rights, an end to unjustified murder. They killed a young man in Ferguson. His name was Michael Brown. It became a national case. They killed a young man in Staten Island. His name was Eric Garner. It became a national case. But you and I know there's a Michael Brown and Eric Garner in every black community across the United States of America. In every community across the United States of America. We got one in Irvington, New Jersey, Abdul Kamal. And the grand jury predictably did the same thing in the Abdul Kamal case that they did in Ferguson and in Staten Island. They refused to indict those officers. Abdul Kamal was unarmed. He was standing on Stanley Street. He had his hands in his pocket. They shot him 15 times, hit him 10 times. And you know what he had in his hand? A cell phone. A cell phone. Not a gun, a cell phone in his hands. His mother, when we wept with the when we met with the prosecutor, his mother, when they told her what the grand jury had decided, she broke down in tears. But you know what? She didn't collapse. She said, "Larry, I'm ready to march. Let's march on the federal building and demand that the U.S. attorney bring civil rights charges against those officers that killed Abdul Kamal." And it's because of her strength and the strength of the other families that we continue this fight. On the 28th, next Saturday, we'll be marching in Bridgeton, New Jersey, where Jerome Reed was killed. Some of you maybe saw the video. He got out the car. He had nothing in his hands. He was shot to death by a black police officer. Doesn't matter. Black officer, white officer, police brutality is police brutality. If it made a difference, then you wouldn't have people over there in the Congo like we had at one time, Shombe and others who killed their own people. We have to organize, brothers and sisters. Police brutality is just a manifestation of a deeper problem. And the deeper problem is a system based on greed, based on racism, based on unjust exploitation, a system based on war and imperial aggression. The truth of the matter is, I don't think police brutality will be eliminated until we eliminate the system that is at the base of police brutality, and that is the system of capitalism and imperialism and the racist ideology that guides it. So let's work together. I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to hear. In fact, Lynn, I'm so glad you made that commercial, because if I hadn't heard you on the way over here, I'd have drove right past this place. And let's support all the progressive social media, including WBAI radio. Let's support all the progressive radio, including Black Agenda Report. I saw Glenn Ford just leave here, Nellie Hester Bailey sitting right here. Let's support all the progressive, CPR Metro, let's support that with Bernard White. Because they're shutting down all of our voices. But they can't shut us down. We're going to fight. We're going to fight till we can't fight no more. And then when we can't fight no more, we're going to hand it over to the young people so that they can continue to fight. And we got to get some young people in this movement. More young people. They're here, that's right. But we need more. There's never enough. So I thank you, brothers and sisters, and I hope that in the days ahead, we will continue to organize and mobilize and build our movement. People are having successes all over the country. You just don't hear about it. But we have to keep fighting. We can't give up. We can't give up. And for you veterans, the worst thing is to let cynicism, because you're not apathetic, but some of y'all are real cynical. And some of y'all are real jaded. But we got to keep fighting. And don't let them fool us into being complacent or being so jaded that we want to get out of the fight. We got to keep fighting. Fighting for our brothers and sisters on that side of the wall and on this side of the wall. Thank you very much, brothers and sisters. Power to the people.
Larry Ham, we're going to ask Laura Whitehorn to make her way down to the stage here. Larry just gave us an instructive lesson in something that Frederick Douglass said, and we always remember educate, agitate, and organize. And Larry Ham and the People's Organization for Progress is a stellar example of that here in the 21st century, because it's not enough just to talk. Those are the jaded folks, because you can talk, but you really, really have to spring into action. Laura, please come. This is an incredible lady, and I think that Ralph is nudging me here because he has all of the right words to say about Laura.
No, I just have a few words to say about Laura, and I say we have a double treat here. We have a political prisoner reading about another terrific political prisoner.
Two
political prisoners, so we have a double treat. Thank you.
So free all political prisoners, and may I add, free Palestine, which we haven't mentioned tonight. And one of the things that has been so inspiring about you, Lynn, is that there was a small group, and I'm happy to say it's getting bigger and bigger, who about a year ago started something called No Separate Justice, which is a monthly vigil on the first Monday of every month outside MCC in support of the Muslim prisoners who are the targets of what the U.S. calls the war on terror, which is the war on Muslims, and like Fahad Hashmi and Tariq Mahana. And for some reason, the first Monday of every month has the most awful weather of any day. So it's either freezing and it's raining, or in the summer it's boiling. So one of those, I think it was a year ago, it was last March, it was raining, it was raining, it was freezing, and we're all standing there, and all of a sudden we look up and there's Lynn and Ralph coming across the street, and you're wearing your, on the walker, and with the, and it was so inspiring. And then this past January, in the worst cold like today, there she was. So solidarity means doing something in action. So I just want to say there are many things concrete. We have to hit the issue of political prisoners from all levels. Sekou got out on parole. I maxed out. I didn't go to parole. Susan, who couldn't be here tonight, Susan Rosenberg, got clemency from Clinton. The Puerto Rican, 11 Puerto Rican independentistas in the year that I got out, 1999, got clemency. We have to push. We have to be in the streets. We have to use the petitions, everything. There are many organizations represented here, and if you're not working with one, start. So I want to call a couple of names just because we're in New York, and there are now, thank you, Sekou, now there are five political prisoners who are former Panthers or supporters of the black struggle in New York State Prison. Jaleel Muntakim, Herman Bell, Robert Seth Hayes, Abdullah Majid, who's about to come up for parole for his first time, and David Gilbert, and he's a white anti-imperialist. And I'm going to read. Now, David Gilbert is a very smart guy. His sentence is 75 to life. He doesn't even go for parole until he's like 90, unless we fight and get that changed. And he has several books out. And he's a very smart guy. But for some reason, he just could not comprehend that tonight was a Valentine to political prisoners. He thought it had to be from a political prisoner to Lynn. So this is what he asked me to read. Lynn Stewart. To me, Lynn Stewart is warmth and courage all wrapped in one, personified. When I was busted on October 20th, 1981, and the court limited Susan Tipograph to representing just one of us co-defendants, we couldn't find a lawyer to take my case. It wasn't just that the case seemed unwinnable legally, and that I had no way to pay. pay an attorney. More, it was that we were surrounded by a roaring inferno of anger and hatred. An effort to take funds for the struggle from a Brinks truck had gone terribly wrong, leading to a shootout in which a guard and two police officers were killed. And 3 days later, our own Mtayari Sundiata was killed by police. Any lawyer who represented us would face intense disdain and hatred. Yet the need was tremendous, not for some legal technicality, but rather to have a defender whose involvement could provide some protection from further physical attacks in jail and to help us find a way, through the deafening roar, to have a voice to talk about the underlying fundamental politics of our case, what had led us to that costly confrontation. Lynn stepped into that breach and was amazing, unflappable, down to earth, sensible, and a great personal as well as legal counselor. When we first met, I was being buffeted by hurricane winds, and I was reassured by her history of activism, including as a librarian in the 1968 Ocean Hill-Brownsville struggle for community control of schools that I had found so inspiring. But even that righteous history didn't prepare me for how staunch and together Lynn proved to be. A magnificent example of full-hearted solidarity with the Black liberation struggle, which blazes the way toward freedom for all humankind. Lynn, I revere how you stood by me and even more your colossal contribution to our common struggle. With tremendous admiration and love, David Gilbert, anti-imperialist political prisoner. So the other person whom I'm going to read a statement from is Herman Bell. And how many people here visit one of the political prisoners? All right, you guys. Seth is like one, not even a whole day drive. You can go up and visit him in Sullivan and come back the same day. Majid, David, and Herman and Jaleel are further. But do it, because they are part of this movement. And there's one word that gets used that I really don't like about political prisoners. And I loved Glenn Ford's speech. I always like him. But the word languish, because there is no political prisoner who is languishing. They are fighting. And Sekou figured out how he would get himself to the parole board. I mean, they are figuring out, and they are leading our efforts to get them out. So, and they're part of the movement, and they understand, and they are in communication with this younger movement which is out there fighting. And they understand and are arguing for us to connect the people who are fighting against the occupying army of the police today and they who fought against the occupying army of the police years ago. So go visit them. Okay, this is from Herman Bell. Herman Bell has done now 41 years in prison. He's been turned down for parole, Bob, what, six times? Six. You're holding up six fingers. I can see that. Six times. And the reason he's turned down isn't because he is a threat to safety or he doesn't have a place to go or a job or anything like that. He's turned down because of the nature of the offense. Okay, to Lynn's Valentine due, love from Herman Bell. Dear friends and supporters, a while ago, a dear friend told me about a RAP, Release Aging People in Prison, another organization you can join and help fight for the freedom of political prisoners, meeting she was at. Several Black church ladies were in attendance. At the meeting, my friend spoke about the political prisoners who are among the aging and should be free. One of the ladies asked, "Political prisoners in what country?" That question resonates with me still. Its implication is plain. No political prisoners here in the U.S. What does that tell us? Back in the 80s, when the first edition of Can't Jail the Spirit came out, I observed that our people, the progressive community, seem more inclined to support liberation movements in Latin America and elsewhere than the one here in our own country. Just trying to keep it real here in my Valentine to you. I appreciate you. When it's time to press some politician or prison official to get something done for us, you rally. When we urgently need bread for a court appeal, family emergency, or just our survival, you dig into your pockets. Check it. We know that most of our friends and supporters are poor, and may be a paycheck away from being homeless yourselves, and still you give. I'm feeling you. Though I've been away from home more than 41 years now, I know much about what goes on out there. I have been deeply encouraged by and grateful for the energy and momentum the slogans and demos, Hands Up, Don't Shoot, I Can't Breathe, Die In, have created. We need our history and our existence as political prisoners to be tied to that energy. Through these long years, you know, we political prisoners have been holding it down in here, advancing the interest of the struggle, educating and helping our people wherever we can. Though our keepers would have people think otherwise of us, we're in this prison environment, but we're not of it. We've represented our struggle and our community with dignity. We're in prison for violent or alleged violent political acts in response to violent attacks on our community. Let us be clear, an oppressed people have every legitimate right to fight and defend ourselves. In this and in your public support and demand for our freedom, please take a stand at the scratch line. Had Martin and Malcolm and all the courageous brothers and sisters who came before us not stood up, where would we be today? Thinking of you on this bitter, cold winter day, standing at the scratch line, Herman. Okay, and Lynn asked me to read this poem, which I wrote in 1998. First, I just want to say another, I know there's been a lot of announcements. On March 20th at the Shabazz Center, Niall Fort, whom some of you may know, he's at an event in Riverside Church tonight, and Sekou Odinga and Dekui Kiani Siddiqui and Johanna Fernandez and I and some other people will be having a book launch for a special issue of a journal that came out on the roots of black resistance and mass incarceration. And in that, some of the stuff that's been said tonight about the traditions and how they continue through and how fighting against the state as a Black Panther and fighting against the state as a resident of Ferguson are connected. And the name of the event is Nothing to Lose But Our Chains, Black Resistance and the Roots of Mass Incarceration at the Shabazz Center on March 20th at, I think, 6 o'clock. And the Nothing to Lose But Our Chains, by the way, comes from Asada, from some lines in a poem of hers which have become an anthem for the Black Lives Matter movement. So there is already that connection. It's happening. All right, so when I was still in prison in 98, I can't remember why I wrote this poem, but there was a Native American man named Robert Standing Deer Wilson, and he had been in prison for some serious, he had some serious charges, he had some serious sentences, and the government said to him, we're going to give you some medical care you need, and we will cut some of your charges if you will kill Leonard Peltier, whose name also needs to be called tonight, Leonard Peltier, one of the longest political prisoners. And while there are many who are not under Obama's jurisdiction because they're in New York or New Jersey, Leonard Peltier, Mutulu Shakur are under Obama's jurisdiction, and Oscar, that he could let them out. Okay, so I can't remember why I wrote the poem, but it's called For Standing Deer. He refused to kill Leonard Peltier. And together, they fought and won the right for Native Americans to practice their religion in prison. And Standing Deer and Leonard became leaders of the Native American struggle inside the prisons. And then he was released finally, and he was killed in a gunfight, not a gunfight, he was killed by someone in 2003. So this poem is for Standing Deer Wilson and all righteous old men and women in prison. This is for the old ones, the wise ones, the gray heads, the old legs that make it up out of the bunk, stiff as that steel slab in the thin, dusty light of another day. This is for the old ones, the quiet ones, the ones who know when to speak out and when to keep their own counsel. Long, pain-filled lives, no perks, no bribes, no easy jobs, no cigars, perfume, brandy, pizza, or braised beef sandwiches. This is for the old ones, the plain ones, without fancy metaphors or flashy alliteration, the ones whose mail dwindles year by year, the ones who wake up one cold prison morning to find that the young ones call them pops or grandma. This is for the ones nourished by their own muscle, sinew, soul. This is for the steadfast. This is a love poem for those so full of heart. I think that will include you.
Well, we've been talking about people who have been beaten down. We've been talking about the terrors in prison. But many years ago, I went into Walpole Prison up in Massachusetts. And having been in prison and watching prisoners in these death camps, it was the first time I was in a prison where the inmate was more fearful than all of the guards. And when he walked in, the guards were more fearful. My English teacher beside me here. It's hard to speak with someone like that. But anyway, when he walked into the yard, the guards stood at attention, and the guards following him were 3 or 4 feet behind him. And I said, "Who is this guy?"
I know Kazi because I did the case of the Ohio 7. And he was the missing mensch. They had these diaries, and these diaries kept saying, "Al not in." Al was in jail. Al was Kazi's name. But Al was very much there, and Al was very much a part of their operation, which, as if you don't know, because we of the left became very negligent during those years, and negligent in ignoring people like the Ohio 7, who only hit military targets, corporate targets, and South African Airways. Never lost a life, never injured anybody, but that's what they did. So here's Kazi. Come up, Kazi, and say a few words.
All power to the people. Thank you, Ralph, and thank you, Lynn. And Lynn was, like she said, our attorney, one of our attorneys in the trial. And as you know, we were, I come from the clandestine unit, United Freedom Front, and we were a multinational unit. Okay, we were a multinational unit, United Freedom Front, and I think that, I just want to keep encouraging the multinational unity because we have political prisoners in Jericho. I'm part of Jericho, which supports the release of all political prisoners. And it's I know there's a lot of different campaigns and a lot of different people working on different prisoners' issues, and that should continue. But as much as we can, we need to come together. We need to come together because we got the same enemy. And, you know, there's many different tactics and people trying, and they should try as many things as we can. And we should try everything that we can. It shouldn't be limited. Even to the point of where we have to go and get some of our people, you know? I mean, I come from that place, so. Yeah, at least visit them. You know, look at man. I mean, seriously, if we look at all the movements that have come before us and all the struggles that come before us, people have had to do things, man. I mean, we can't be afraid. I mean, fear is okay. It keeps us, you know, right there. But we have to find a way past the fear. And I mean, it's a big thing, you know, this country and these gulags that they got our people locked up in. But, you know, they're just people, just like us. And so I want to say something about the prisoners, because after I got locked up, I met people from the Puerto Rican independence movement inside. I met people from Cuba. I met people from Palestine. I met people from all the different movements inside. And, you know, not everyone does their time the same way. Not everyone does their time the same way. A lot of people that go inside continue to struggle the same way they were struggling outside, but in a different way. And then they come under, like, Veranza and, like, some other people. After their time is done, they're still locked up. You know, they're finding ways of keeping people locked up forever, even after their time is done. So, I mean, we can't, yeah, it's a business, but we got business too, you know? We got business too. You know? And we have to find a way to move to support those people, or we won't get another generation to stand up and fight. Can't leave those locked up and expect somebody to come and see that and say, oh, I'm going to go down that road. You know? But anyways, I want to thank everybody for coming. I want to thank Ralph and them for putting this on. Thank you, brother.
Let's free them all.
I'm going to speak for the most despised among us, the lawyers. The lawyers. Now, my dear David wrote a beautiful Valentine to me, but I'm not a lawyer anymore. So you see, he gets in under the neutrality law, maybe. But there are some lawyers who have been here. Some have left already. But Bob Boyle has done more for political prisoners, including this one right here, than maybe any other lawyer. He was absolutely, he single-handedly brought Daruba Moore home from buried in the jailhouse by his work, his unflagging work on the Freedom of Information Act material, which he got by the carton load. And finally, they found the flaw where the state had not allowed Daruba, I hope I get this right, had not allowed Daruba to know that he was really being prosecuted by the feds, although it was allegedly, you better come here and say it, Boyle. Just come here and say what I'm trying to say. I also want to say that earlier tonight, Jill Elijah was here. She also has always been ready, willing, and able for any political prisoner. Danny Myers was here. Also, is Moira Cohen here? One of our new younger stars, instrumental in working on bringing Sekou home and now working on Abdul Majeed's case. So, you see, there are still the idealistic among us, and happy to have her join our steady band, I guess you would call us. Also, Florence Morgan, I can name, Michael Smith, Marty Stolar, Michael Warren, of course, who represented so many and continues to represent Jamil Alameen. Yes, and who was upstate, I believe, but Susan Tippograph, another person who is always available, always has a way to go with to do anything for the people who are locked up. So, Bob, tell us what you did for Daruba, and then we will move on. But the lawyers, we're not all bad.
And thank you. Thank you. Yeah, March 22nd, 1990 was when Daruba bin Wahad got out of prison, 25 years ago. There has been victory since then, but there have been, you know, ongoing struggles. And just in the last year, Lynn Stewart started out a great year, December 31st over into January 1st, getting the call that she was getting out of prison. What a great start to the year. March 4th, 2014, Eddie Conway in Maryland got out after 43 years in prison. Then, of course, we have Sekou Odinga, who was here earlier tonight. And I'm probably leaving one or two out, but there have been some victories this year, which is very heartening. Larry Hamm talked about cynicism, and I guess, you know, I kind of have a lot of cynicism. It's something I have to fight against. You know, being a lawyer, doing appeals, where if you win 10% of the time, you're doing great. So it really plays on your psyche. And something Lynn talked about earlier, visiting the prisoners is what fights the cynicism. Because how could you be cynical after getting out from visiting Herman Bell, which I did just a few weeks ago? Lynn Stewart kept us going as we were fighting to get her out of prison last year. And the families of the political prisoners, Ralph, Betty, Herman's family, all of them, just, you know, give you that little push. And so Laura mentioned this earlier. It's important to, even if you just could write letters to the political prisoners, they will write back. It may take a while, but they will write back. Getting the young people to go up and see them not only helps them, but obviously helps you. So that's really important. And it's really important for this, oh, I'm going to be 60 in April, do you believe? 60-year-old guy, to keep that in mind. And these events, you know, are almost kind of like therapy for me, too, because, you know, and I got the opportunity to speak, because being locked up in the office, working on these things, sometimes you get isolated, and it's important to understand that the lawyers are part of the movement. The movement is part of the legal work, and that's what we all do. And I do want to invoke someone here tonight by the name of Harold Price Farringer, who passed away earlier this week, who worked, a great lawyer, most noted primarily for fighting in support of the First Amendment and censorship. But he, in the last push to get Lynn out of prison, was invaluable. He worked on the last appeal. He went down to see Lynn a couple of times, was actively involved in the clemency effort, and all the while, we didn't know about it, was sick with cancer and passed away earlier this week. So, I learned a lot from Harold, not quite how to comb my hair, because he had this wonderful white hair, 87 years old, never out of place, and always wore a blue suit and a white shirt and a tie everywhere he went, even when he went to Carswell when it was 115 degrees to see Lynn, showed up in that suit. But he was a wonderful guy, and we'll miss him. But, you know, I came here tonight really angry because in the last 2 weeks I've been working on Herman Bell's petition to challenge his sixth parole denial. And, you know, it after doing this for many years, it takes a lot to kind of sometimes get yourself going to do it again, because this is the fourth petition we've done in court challenging a parole denial. But when you read it, you get angry. I mean, just so people know what it is like to go before the parole board, you're summoned into this room where there's either two or three people, commissioners appointed by the governor. Many of them are former cops, detectives, retired. Some, you know, are victims' rights advocates. And these are the people who decide whether you're going to be released. And even though, you know, and talking to the prisoners, they know they're going in front of these three people. But after, you know, 39, 40 years, and you know that these people have the decision in front of them to let you out the next day or in a month, you know, you're human. And you know, even despite yourself, you can get your hopes up, and your family gets your hopes up. But, you know, the hearing for him was a sham. Herman submitted a 6-page letter before he went in, you know, expressing a certain level of remorse, but more importantly, traced his political development and how he came to be a member of the Black Panther Party, Black Liberation Army, and made the choices that he did. But that now, after 41 years, he served his time and he should be out. So he's asked about this statement. He says his statement, and then this is that actual quote from the hearing, because it just got me so angry. This commissioner by the name of Ferguson, and remember, we should know these people's names. This guy was named James Ferguson, and there was a woman by the name of Alexander who presided at his hearing. So, Mr. Bell, Ferguson says, how did you go from volunteer work in the community to shooting cops in the back of the head? That was the first question to him by the parole board. So, Mr. Bell, you talk about all this history. Who did kill Malcolm X anyway? Don't you know? He, in the decision, talks about Herman Bell as being devoid of any recognition of his wrongdoing, and that he, and that in telling his history, he exploited the deaths of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and Malcolm X to embark upon a campaign of murder and carnage. And this is the hearing. This is the unbiased hearing that he was confronted with. And the ones for the others weren't that much different. And also in front of them, which he announced at the start of the hearing, there were 12 cartons of letters containing 48,000 letters from generated through the Patrolman's Benevolent Association website soliciting a campaign to deny him parole. And he was told that there were 48,000 letters opposing his release. Now, is this going to be a fair hearing? But this is what he's confronted with, and what the other political prisoners are confronted with, whose cases involve the death of a police officer. And, you know, I think we learn from if we didn't know it already, and the people in this room did, the disgraceful behavior of Lynch and his cronies recently when the two officers were shot and killed in Brooklyn. The unstated, subtle, but now even, you know, the overt power of the police unions and the culture of the police, that they could, you know, that they, you know, I'm not going to defend de Blasio, but that they could get away with at a funeral, turning their backs, at the funeral of one of their own. And this is the power that we're dealing with, because whenever someone who's convicted of murdering a cop in New York State goes before the parole board, there's an alert on their website, and they generate this campaign. And so we have to take on the power, the unelected and the arbitrary power of these police unions who don't live in the communities anyway, the cops. They live in Rockland County, Westchester County, Suffolk County. That's where they live. They're not from the communities. And to bring us back to, you know, and then I'll close to the Black Panther Party, but one of the reasons it was under attack was its efforts on community control of the police and decentralization of the police. And so we've kind of come out full circle. You had someone like Herman on the street fighting for these things, going to jail and confronting now the same things, you know, when he's trying to get out after 43 years in prison. Yeah, so I'm angry today, but I think I got a little bit of it off of my. But you know, you got to be angry, right? You got to be angry. You got to do your job, but you got to be angry, right? You know, and so, but I'll work, you know, we in the, I consider myself, I was an activist first before I was a human being before I became a lawyer. So I always consider myself an activist and not a lawyer. And so that's what I want to remain, and I want to work you all, with you all, to free all the political prisoners. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Bob. And I always have a warm spot in my heart, because when Lynn was before this prosecutor in New York's office and Bob was there, I'm going to let it go. Thanks, Bob. Next, and as we go around supporting our political prisoners, we find ourselves in different cities. And I found myself in Washington, D.C., and I met a wonderful political artist and a political activist, Lucy Murphy, and I'd like for her to come up and give us a little entertainment along with our heavy political speeches. And this is going to be political entertainment. Thank you.
I love your Palestinian scarf. I feel wonderful here in my spiritual family, which includes Williams Kamakaro of the Bolivarian Circle and Nadret Sadiq of the Committee to Support the Blind Sheikh, and one of the great satirical minds, Professor Louis, of the People's Music Network, and probably many other things going on here in New York that I don't know about. And I know I have other friends in the audience, and I need to get to my song. So I hope you will understand if I don't call you out. This is a song that a lot of people know in D.C. Oh, my goodness, yes, Eugene Hammond, who is making it possible for me to stay a little longer here in New York. And we work together to break the blockade against Cuba and to normalize relations. But of course, in order for that to happen, somebody is going to has to learn how to respect the sovereignty of another country. You better listen, my brother. If you do, you can hear. There are voices still calling across the years. They are crying across the ocean. They are crying across the land. And they will, till we all come to understand. None of us are free. 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 If one of us is chained, none of us are free. I'm going to raise that just a little bit. None of us are free. None of us are free. None of us are free. If one of us is chained, none of us are free. There are people in darkness. They just can't see the light. If we don't say it's wrong, then that says it's right. We got to feel for each other. Let our brothers know we're here. Got to get the message. Send it out all loud and clear. None of us are free. None of us are free. None of us are free. If one of us is chained, none of us are free. Well, I swear to you, salvation isn't very hard to find. None of us can find it on our own. We got to join together, spirit, heart, and mind. So all the souls who are suffering know they're not alone. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Help me out now. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Ooh, 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 none of us are free. None of us are free. None of us are free. None of us are free if one of us is chained. None of us are free. Well, I swear to you, salvation isn't very hard to find. None of us can find it on our own. We got to join together, spirit, heart, and mind. So all the souls who are suffering know they're not alone. Us are free. If you just look around you, you're gonna see what I say, that the world's getting smaller each passing day. Well, it's time to make some changes. It's time we all realize that the truth is shining right before our eyes. None of us are free. None of us are free. None of us are free if one of us is chained. None of us are free. Let's do the whole line. None of us are free if one of us is chained. None of us are free. And of course, that is found on YouTube if you all would like to learn the song, sung by Ray Charles. And it was brought to us by Brenda. Oh, my goodness, I forgot Brenda's last name. But she wrote a lot of famous top 10 type songs. Last year, I sang a song, Palestine Needs Her Freedom, Palestine Needs Our Love. I'm not going to sing that again this year because it was done last year. And you can hear that on Artists Against Apartheid. org for free. And once again, I thank you.
Lucy came from Washington, D.C. She was very instrumental in organizing and demonstrating in front of the White House in the very hot summer of last year. Now, do I have somebody who was very active? Do we have the Skype going now? Pam Africa lost her cell phone. Look around you. Somebody has my cell phone. Call Pam. Are we ready up there? Tech people, tech guy, please. Someone you all know was very instrumental in bringing Lynn out.
Hey, hey, you see me? Okay, here I am. I see myself down there in the corner, and I see you, I suppose. Is that correct? I'm seeing the front. It looks like a church or something. What is it? Oh, there you go. That explains it. All right. So what's going on? What do you need me to do?
We wanted to say hello to you. We wanted to recognize you as someone who has given much of your life to support the rest of us. And so we're giving you a Valentine of love to you and other political prisoners.
Well, I have to tell you, we love Valentines around here. Unfortunately, we missed Mark Cook, who was Mark Cook had another appointment he had to go to at 7. So he's gone, but, you know, and he's a long time, black activist, you know, who has done everything from Black Panthers to you name it, you know, what an incredible human being. And we're talking here, and I know is this in behalf, is Lynn Stewart here? Is Lynn listening at all?
looking right up at you and reminding you that Paulette was very instrumental in getting you to be before us so that we could learn about our political prisoners.
I mean, it's amazing how much work she did for so many of us, you know. So, I mean, I all of us honor her tremendously, you know. So, thank you, Lynn. And thank you, everybody that supports Lynn, because it's been, she's been a tremendous, tremendous effort, you know, helping all of us for many, many years. I mean, I'm so fortunate to be out of prison. There are many of us that are still in prison that she works for all the time, tirelessly. And, you know, I thank every one of you for that. Something we need to do. You know, we have a lot of work left, right?
Larry, Giddens Bay, can you see us at the podium, man?
I really don't, you know, all I see is an open front.
Oh, man.
Oh, my.
Oh, that's a little better. Okay.
Well, Larry, this is Kazi, man.
Great.
You hear me?
You know, love the opportunity to communicate with you and learn how to use the equipment a little better. And all my friends everywhere, you know, Kazi, Paulette, everybody, you know, everybody knows, you know, Ashanti, Alston, I mean, all of our friends, you know, we all know each other, we remember each other, we honor each other.
Well, Kazi tells me he hasn't seen you since he was in the hole with you. So that's, I guess you know all about him. You don't have to see him to know he's here.
It's been a long time. Yeah. Well,
okay.
We're looking to...
Thank you so much for being so patient. We're trying to get our technology going. And we want to say hello to Paulette, all of the people out on the West Coast, and happy Valentine's Day.
Yeah. You know, absolutely. You know, Ed wanted to come. He has people from out of town. Mark had another commitment, so it's just me. Sorry.
Okay, thanks for being there for us.
Oh, wow. You have me up on a big screen.
right, on the big screen.
That's pretty amazing. Well there are a number of people there who may know me, some who may not, but I send my love and respect to all of you for your tireless efforts in behalf of all of us, honestly.
Thank you so very much.
It's amazing, you know.
Much appreciated. Love you. Okay,
we'll get to talk to, there's so many of us still in that, you know, it's something that we're all conscious of all the time. It never leaves our mind, you know.
Okay, and thanks again. And we're going to move on to another person who has been very instrumental in the struggle for liberation for all people around the world. Tech guy, Ernesto, California. That's Minneapolis. Okay, Jess Sundin, hello from the people in New York.
Hello there. Thank you for having me.
Okay. Tell us about yourself and your brothers and sisters.
Well, again, thank you so much for inviting us to be a part of this special event for political prisoners and celebrating Lynn's freedom and working to free them all. I'm honored to join you. I'm one of 23 grand jury resistors who were targeted by the government because we're anti-war activists and folks working in and in solidarity with the Palestinian Liberation Movement and other struggles against empire. And a few other folks with me earlier this evening, they couldn't stay, but I'm glad to still be here. I wanted to mention or make sure that all of you there are aware that it's been a few years since our grand jury was first convened, and while they have not yet pursued charges against us, they are after our friend Rasmiya Odeh, a Palestinian activist from Chicago. Rasmiya is 67 years old, She's been in the United States for 20 years, and now they're coming after her, saying she has no right to be here. In her case, they're doing Israel's dirty work. Rasmia, 45 years ago, was tortured into a confession by Israeli soldiers, and today the U.S. government is saying that that dirty case from the corrupt apartheid regime means that Rasmia has to go. I was at her trial last November in Detroit, and a jury convicted her without ever hearing what this woman had survived. A judge is going to sentence her in Detroit on March 12th, and the government is calling for her to be imprisoned and then deported, losing her citizenship. We're going to fight that every step of the way. And Rasmia is going to appeal the guilty verdict and her press through the appeal process. I wanted to ask if any of you can join us in Detroit on March 12th. We want to see you there. And before, you know, I know it's been a long night, but I want to close with the words of Rasmia herself, who I respect very much. What she said outside the courthouse after the guilty verdict came in last November, she said, "We can find justice someplace, maybe not in this court, maybe in another place. There's justice in this world, but not in this country, not just in this country, excuse me." She said, "There's justice in this world and we will find it. We will face injustice and we have to change this world, not just in this country, in all the world, in all the places there is no justice. We have to bring justice together. In spite of everything, we are the stronger people, not the government who is unjust." I think Rasmia's strength is an example to me, and I hope it will be an example to all of you. So I just wanted to thank you for allowing us to join you. We want justice for Rasmia, freedom for her and for all political prisoners and prisoners of war. And with that, I just say solidarity.
Solidarity, and thank you. And tell Rasmia we need her more than she needs us because she stands for something. Thank you, Jess.
Thank
Love you. California.
Hey, Ernesto.
Hey, Ralph, how you doing? Sorry that we kept you so long, but I see it's still light out there. Give us a few words of encouragement on this Valentine's Day.
Sisters and brothers, comrades and friends, this is a joyous occasion. We are able tonight, despite all odds, to celebrate the anniversary of liberation of our sister in struggle, Lynn Stewart, buried alive by a fascist system for the crime of defending an innocent man. Her persecution and prosecution aimed at every citizen seeking defense against a criminal state, targeting through her punishing plight every lawyer brave enough and rare enough to take the challenge and turn the finger of accusation against the criminal system. We never had the support of those unwilling to accuse the courts, the judges, the federal injustice system, and their appointed persecutors, beginning with that notorious lawyer for the death squads of Columbia, Attorney General Eric Holder, terrorist in chief, let alone his sugar-coated master, spinner of deceit, Barack Obama. Never forget that the fearless and relentless exposure of these truths before masses of people in over 40 countries raised the political price for the designed murder of Lynn Stewart by this ruthless ruling class. That alone is why we are able to embrace her tonight. Our determination to speak truth to power altered the calculus of their vicious design. The United States has the largest prison population in the world. Of every major nation on earth, the United States of America has the highest per capita rate of incarceration. Only the tiny island of Seychelles, with 786 prisoners, has a higher percentage number, and its regime is a creature of our own. U.S. Bureau of Justice statistics show 2,266,800 adults incarcerated in federal, state, and country prisons, but 4,814,200 were on probation or parole, with a constant recycling back into prison. Of adults under correctional supervision, the total number is 6,977,700. The Vera Institute of Justice reported in 2015 that jails and prisons throughout the United States have become warehouses for the impoverished, unemployed, underemployed, mentally ill, those suffering addiction, and those lacking the ability to post bail. The 2014 report by Human Rights Watch states that tough-on-crime laws adopted in rapid succession since the 1980s have filled prisons across the United States with nonviolent offenders. In a vast system of maximum security prisons, supermax prisons, secreted across the length and breadth of the United States, prisoners are held in 24-hour solitary confinement with sensory deprivation, as in ADX Florence in Florence, Colorado. The United States of America maintains an ever-expanding gulag of people buried alive, people without funds, people without adequate defense, people without advocates, human contact, or the prospect of relief. I will not bandy words here about justice, justice delayed, justice ignored, justice forever denied. Albert Woodfox has been imprisoned for 43 years in solitary confinement, first in the Louisiana State Penitentiary known as Angola, 23 hours a day, confined in a small cell, 4 steps long and 3 steps across, with no social interaction. No physical evidence tied him to the death of a prison guard. The widow of the guard testified that he was innocent. Federal courts overturned his conviction 3 times. Despite this, the state of Louisiana spent millions of dollars appealing 3 times to keep him buried alive. The U.S. Department of Justice stood behind them in thundering silence and intimidating resolve. On February 18th, 2 days ago, the Electronic Frontier Foundation revealed that hundreds of South Carolina inmates have been sentenced to prolonged terms of solitary confinement for seeking to access Facebook, an offense that has been placed on a par with murder, rape, rioting, escape, and hostage taking. Since 2012, the South Carolina Department of Corrections made the putative crime of creating or assisting with a social networking site a level 1 offense. The penalty is years in isolation in solitary confinement. All privileges are permanently removed, including visitation or telephone access. 16 inmates were sentenced to over a decade for such disciplinary detention. One inmate received for this offense over 37 years in isolation. The process is veiled in secrecy. In May 2014, Jonathan McClain received 24.6 years in such disciplinary detention for making 28 posts on Facebook. South Carolina Department of Corrections investigators created fake social media profiles to entrap inmates and to fabricate such charges against them. All information regarding these operations is shielded from disclosure under the State's Freedom of Information Act. This is now being replicated in Alabama, Arizona, and New Mexico. The Florida Department of Corrections has adopted a policy similar to that of South Carolina. The ACLU has filed a lawsuit in Indiana, where prison officials so penalized an inmate because his sister launched a social media campaign documenting his innocence and seeking his freedom. The United States of Justice is a co-conspirator. Every single one of the multi-prisoners buried alive in this vast gulag is a political prisoner, a designed victim of the criminalization of poverty, a target of a minute ruling class that has established a dictatorship of finance and corporate capital that conducts a relentless war of terror against the masses of our people, ever targeting the most vulnerable among us as an object lesson to us all. It is time for freedom, for the millions of victims of this vicious system, yes, as the indispensable commitment on which the freedom of us all depends. For all who live and work in America are in their gun sights. All who struggle with day-to-day survival are on their radar. All who oppose genocidal war and the drumbeat of fear and incitement that would cow and silence us are on their lists. That is why, sisters and brothers, when we advance the cry, bring them home now, we follow it with a survival summons, a revolutionary call to those with eyes to see, hearts to feel, and a will to overcome. Free the land. Free the land.
Free the land.
Free the land.
Thank you, Ralph. And you see, all of you here, that the hand was on my shoulder. That means it's time to go. But there's one more. I got 3 minutes, as I have been told, and I'm going to be very brief. It's red velvet. But take a piece of cake and look at it. And take a piece of cake, look at what's written across it. Free all political prisoners. And so, finally, final words of this meeting. Greetings from Jeff Mackler to the meeting. And it's comrades and friends. My heart goes out to Lynn and all of you glorious fighters gathered here tonight as you join to celebrate her first year of freedom and much improved prospects for a long, healthy life engaged in humanity's freedom struggles. We collectively fought for and won Lynn's freedom and boosted her faith that she would and could prevail in the face of terrible odds. But we don't calculate our actions by the odds of winning every battle. We fight on because we know that we fight for truth, and that one day this monstrous, oppressive system will be brought down by a determined and massive rising of working people, exhilarated by their confidence in victories achieved in the final victory that will inevitably be within their reach. Giant hugs to Lynn and Ralph. Solidarity with all who struggle against injustice and oppression. Free all political prisoners. Free the working class in all its manifestations from the terror of corporate greed and plunder. Lynn's victory was our collective achievement. There will be many more to come in solidarity. Jeff Mackler, former organizer, West Coast Lynn Stewart Defense Committee, Administrative Committee, United National Anti-War Coalition.